welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Maggie. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, good. Got some important, critical, practice-altering research to go over today.
Absolutely. Listeners, stand by. This is a practice changer. We're actually going to do two things today. We're going to talk about two separate abstracts, not even the same organ system. You won't want to miss this week's poem. You probably can't hear what I'm doing right now, but I'm actually cracking my knuckles. And for generations, certainly for most of my life, my mother would slap my hands and tell me to stop doing that, Michael. You're going to end up with arthritis when you get older. Surprisingly, we don't know why knuckle cracking occurs. The leading theory, I'm told by rheumatology friends, is that there's some sort of cavitation in the joint. There's a partial vacuum that forms with the fluid, and that it rapidly collapses when you stretch the joint and produces that sort of sharp sound and relief of pain. Other theories are that perhaps you're stretching the ligaments, or that there's some sort of adhesions that have developed and are broken. Anyways, the only study before this week's study that Mark pointed out to me, the only study that I could find was by Dr. Donald Unger. Now, Unger was remarkable because he didn't really do a prospective study. What he did was he had his left hand and his right hand. And his left hand, he cracked the knuckles every single day for 50 years. He did nothing to his right hand. And guess what? No arthritis developed in the left hand, and no arthritis developed in the right hand. So that was the only study that I was able to find that was published for years and years, until Mark found a article published in the Journal of the American Board of Family Medicine. Mark, it asks the absolutely critical question, is habitual knuckle cracking a risk factor for hand osteoarthritis? What did this group of astounding researchers find?
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that makes me read 25 medical journals a month to find. I mean, actually, I really do love studies where they not only tackle the important stuff, but also just the interesting common stuff. So, yeah, they looked for adults 50 to 89 who had x-rays of their right hand. Why the right hand, not the left hand? I do not know, but the right hand. There were 188 patients with radiographically diagnosed hand osteoarthritis and 141 who didn't have any evidence of osteoarthritis. So these were folks referred in for an x-ray, probably because of some sort of symptoms. Radiographic reports were reviewed. They were then called the patients up and asked them whether or not they regularly crack their knuckles, whether they did it in the past, how often, and so on. And they got about two-thirds of the people to respond. And if anything, this kind of a study design would be biased in favor of finding an association, because people who have osteoarthritis are going to look back and go, oh, I shouldn't have cracked my knuckles. So they might be more likely to remember it. That's called recall bias. And they actually didn't find any association. So given that this was a negative trial and a case control study, it makes the presence of a true association really, really unlikely. So I think we have two studies, neither one perfect, but neither one showing any evidence that your mother was right. So your mother, Michael, was wrong.
Great. Now you're going to, on the air, in front of all these people, you're going to make fun of my mother.
Mama Wilkes. Yeah, Mama Wilkes was wrong. So the other study, this is just a quickie. That was kind of a quickie. So another quickie on a much more, actually, important topic had to do with oral feeding for people with dementia. So often as people get demented, they have trouble feeding. They eat more slowly. They have difficulty eating a balanced, nutritious diet. So these researchers looked for studies of high-calorie supplements in this population of demented elderly persons. They found 13 controlled trials, and 9 of the studies showed that body mass index did increase somewhat. So they did help in terms of gaining weight, if that was all you cared about. But frankly, that really isn't that important an outcome. What they did not find was any evidence that pressure sores, infections, mortality, a need for other interventions, anything else improved. So while giving high-calorie supplements to the demented elderly will increase their weight a little bit, might make caregivers feel better, like they're doing something, no evidence that it actually improves other outcomes, either cognitive or physical.
Great. So we're going to have a new obesity epidemic amongst the demented patients.
Yeah, hard. Not something I'm worried about. But anyway, that was interesting. And, you know, I think we've got to be very thoughtful about, you know, feeding has – It's a very loaded thing, and I think we're finally getting around to the idea that tube feeding for demented elderly is not a good idea, actually worsens outcomes, and that's a growing acceptance and understanding of that, and this is kind of in that same general area.
Excellent. We'll talk with you again next week and look for something equally exciting.
All right.
Thanks,
Mark. Can't wait.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.